A Peter Rogers production, Carry On Regardless, a black and white film starring Sidney James, Kenneth Connor, Charles Hawtrey, Joan Sims, Kenneth Williams, Bill Owen, Liz Fraser, Terence Longdon. With Hattie Jakes, Esma Cannon, Sidney Taffler, Julia Arnold, Terence Alexander, Stanley Unwin, Joan Hickson, Betty Marsden, Fenella Fielding, David Lodge. And Jerry Desmond, Ambrose Philpotts, Nicholas Parsons, Cyril Chamberlain, Cyril Raymond, Eric Polman, June Jago, Michael Ward, Douglas Ives, Judith Furse, Howard Marion Crawford. Screenplay by Norman Hudis. Music composed and directed by Bruce Montgomery. Produced by Peter Rogers. Directed by Gerald Thomas. In the offices of Helping Hands Limited, Bert Handy's face is obscured by a copy of the Times newspaper. He stops reading, lowering the newspaper to reveal his craggy, well-worn face. He casts his secretary, the diminutive, spinsterly Miss Cooling, a decidedly browned-off look.
Well, it looks like we'll have to bung the advert in for another week, Miss Cooling.
I can't understand it, Mr. Handy. Not a single reply. And we're supposed to open for business today.
Well, I'll just have to postpone. When you open a gaff, an enterprise like this, you have got to employ people with know-how, flexibility. People who are ready to undertake anything for anybody. That's the whole idea behind Helping Hands.
Never mind, Mr. Handy, dear. I'm sure you'll get staffed.
Eh? Oh, staffed.
A sleek, black 1950s Rolls-Royce pulls up in a city street, hopping out a dapper man in a suit and trilby. He enters the Ministry of Labour Employment Exchange. He approaches the counter with a clerk, a short man with a mop of curly black hair, stands smoking.
Morning.
Morning.
Oh, nothing interesting?
Well, if there was, I'd be after it myself.
I say, are you looking for a job, Mr. Twist?
And why should I not, Mr. Infield Hopping? I'm not a fixture here, you know. They didn't build a place around me, you know. A Ministry of Labour clerk can get fed up with his job like ordinary people, you know.
What's your Mr. Infield Hopping? What's your Mr. Twist? What do you got today?
Oh, there's nothing, Mr. Weston. Honestly, it's hardly worth my friend's petrol to bring me here each day.
Sauntering in, his nose in the air.
Ah, bonjour. Guten Tag. Bonjour, shalom aleichem.
Hey.
I'm saying good morning. Just demonstrating four of the 16 languages I speak fluently. For your benefit, Mr. Twist, there must be a worthwhile appointment for me today. Please say there is.
Please say there is. Mr. Courtney?
Yes.
There isn't.
Two brassy blondes bump.
Do you mind?
Do you mind?
Oh, charming.
You're in a nice mood, aren't you?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm absolutely fed up.
So am I.
I'm looking for an interesting job.
Me too.
There just aren't any exciting jobs for women.
You're so right. It's a man's world.
Yes, well, it's about time somebody did something about it.
I agree. Come on.
Entering the men's section.
Here, you can't come in here.
Why not? I can do a man's job, and I will too if it's interesting enough.
Me too.
What have you got?
Nothing.
Mincing in.
Hello. Isn't it a lovely morning? Anything on the cards?
Nothing.
Mr. Infield Hopping's attention's caught by a copy of the Times on the floor. He scrapes it up, reading intently, then folds it resolutely under his arm and marches out.
Not one thing. I've never seen him move so fast.
He was reading the paper.
The paper? That can only mean...
A job. A fascinating job.
They rush out.
So fascinating, it's not been notified here.
Realization dawns and Mr. Twist jumps over the counter. Mr. Infield Hopping approaches Helping Hands Limited, unaware of the others filing behind him. When they see the business sign, they bundle past down the entrance steps, each man for himself. They clamour, jockeying outside the door. Bert opens up and they surge in, pinning him and Miss Cooling against the wall.
Twist is the name, Sam Twist.
Francis Courtney, at your service.
Mike Weston, that's me.
Adelia King, Miss.
Dimple. Gabby Dimple.
Lily Duveen, that's me.
Montgomery Infield Hopping.
Seven, that's my lucky number. You're all right.
Later, they play the waiting game.
Come in.
An elderly gent enters.
Good morning. Who's responsible in charge here?
Hey?
Oh, you must be Mr. Hayden, then. How'd you do?
Yes.
I am Owen, this Lieutenant Scraithor, and had a chance to do the first meeting.
Oh, yes.
No, we haven't for this. You don't seem to understand my meal.
Well, yes, certainly, sir. What's the job?
There's no job, Mr. Astorthwaite. You don't seem to understand the basic English 25, though, Mr. Fane.
Well, look, just give all the details to my secretary of the assignment. You know, Miss Cooley, she's right there.
Assignment? There's no written assignment, sure, of Miss Cooley in the Tennessee. You know, I've come from this monthly grill and come to meet you, Mr. Tennessee, therefore, and principal for it. And I take it you're he.
Well, we do undertake anything, yes. Look, you tell Miss Cooley all about it, will you?
Really, this is most provocative, this encourage mould. Here I've come to milk and the human kindly, and come to give it to you from the monthly thing, as you'll be afflicted first month and month, you look in your impo for it, and all you can follow me off in your secretary. A bleeding charmist must have gave for it, but that's not the pearl.
Well, I don't think that's too tough an assignment, do you, Miss Cooley?
No. No.
You've got a note of it, then?
No.
And I should think not. I'd even utter a worm, and I don't think I will for it. The age of courtesy and discourage more in this country is where it's finished, I feel. And if you want me to convey my solicitor, I'll do his legal fare for it and serve you a writ in the early morning. I tell you, I can be as cold and legal as the next, sir, and crystal clear. Good morning.
The man goes as Francis Courtney enters.
Oh, sorry. Was that a job? What did he want?
New set of teeth by the sound of it. A nutcase. Well, we get them. I mean, this kind of organisation is swamped with nuts.
And customers, I hope.
But not at the moment for you. Girls!
As they totter forward, Bert produces a measuring tape. Lily obliges, raising her arms. Bert holds it around her ample bosom, and then her hips and waist. Curly-haired Lily's face falls as Bert checks her measurements against a scrap of paper. He waves her away and repeats the procedure with busty platinum blonde Delia. He checks her voluptuous vital statistics against the paper and smiles.
Dead right. How would you like to try the lady's complete wardrobe?
Would I?
Get cracking then.
Well, thanks. I suppose she won on points.
At a Mr. Denning's, Delia comes from behind a screen modelling underwear.
Such a lovely idea. A first anniversary trousseau for your wife. Feels so good.
He walks round her.
Yes. Doesn't look bad either. A perfect fit. Thank you, Miss King.
He turns flustered.
Can't wait to try on the others.
There's more lingerie on the bed. Delia puts on a black feathery headpiece and grabs up a little black number, taking it behind the screen. She struts back out, admiring herself in a full-length mirror. Mr. Denning nods appreciatively as she curtsies, then goes to look at what else to try on. Reaching for a garment, she overstretches, her legs flip up and she spread eagles over the bed. Mr. Denning enjoys the view. Later, she emerges from the screen wearing a vampish black sequined gown with gloves and a fur wrap. She does a Mae West hip wiggle. Mr. Denning smiles blithely. Delia picks up a lacy negligee and, trailing her gloved fingers sexily over the screen, disappears once more. She floats back out, swishing the negligee dreamily in front of the mirror. Mr. Denning's eyes boggle.
Perfect. A perfect fit. Thank you very much indeed, Miss King.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. What a marvellous surprise for Mrs. Delling.
Well, I expect you'll want a coffee when you're dressed.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Denning goes out as Delia, now back in the lacy black undergarments, has one last look in the mirror before unhooking her bra. Denning suddenly rushes back.
Are you dressed?
Oh, Mr. Denning, does it look like it?
Helen, my wife, she's just getting out of a taxi.
I thought she was away until tonight.
So did I.
Oh, well, it only means she gets a surprise a few hours earlier.
It means she'll get one I didn't plan.
What's that?
You.
Me?
You.
Oh. Oh, me, oh.
Quick, hide. Oh. Not in there. Oh. You haven't got time to get out.
No, and I'm not dressed for the street.
Precisely.
He shunts Delia in a fitted wardrobe, then hastily removes telltale garments on the screen before his pretty young wife enters.
Helen, what on earth are you doing here?
I missed the train. It's not worth going now.
She sees the assortment of clothes on the bed.
What's this? Well, I know I'm absent-minded, but I'm sure I'd have remembered ordering all this. Did I?
No, darling, I did. I wanted you to see them all and then wear some for our anniversary dinner.
Oh, darling, it's the most staggering gift. Well, suppose they don't fit?
Oh, they will. I've seen to that.
How?
Does it matter?
Oh, poor darling husband, all upset and nervy because I've spoilt his lovely surprise. Well, never mind. You stay here and I'm going to go and make you a lovely cup of coffee.
Well, it is rather maddening to... Helen!
What?
What are you doing?
putting my coat away.
Well, you shouldn't even have taken it off.
Why not?
Because this central heating's given out.
Darling, are you all right?
Yes, perfectly.
I think you need something stronger than coffee.
Helen, give me that coat.
That's no way to treat clothes. Let me hang it
up.
That
old thing.
Old? I bought it 2 months ago.
Give it away. Throw it away. It's certainly not worth hanging up. Helen, please. Don't open.
She does. Delia, disguised in a jacket, tie and trilby, swaggers out manfully.
Father, I had a good look round in there, Mr. Dallin, and I'll let you have the estimate for the new clothes rail as soon as possible. Morning, Mum.
Marching out, she winks at Denning.
Darling, you're not going to believe this because, you see, he came to try on your clothes, but there's absolutely nothing between us, I promise you, because he's really a very nice girl.
Sam Twist paces up and down in the Helping Hands office. Bert shrugs as he exchanges a despairing look with Miss Cooling.
Sam, relax.
Relax? I'll relax when I get an assignment. Everyone else is out and about except me.
Oh, don't be silly. They're all on routine jobs. I'll bet you that fate has got something very exciting in store for you.
Well, it'll be the first time in my life.
Helping Hands? Oh, yes, with pleasure. Immediately? Yes? Right. Got it. Thank you. What did I tell you?
No. What? Something exciting?
Babysitting.
Mrs. Panting, a black bobbed siren looking irresistible in a revealing black negligee, looks fondly at a baby photograph on a sideboard. She tidies her living room. She hurries to the door and opens up. Sam can all but talk, unnerved by her heaving bosom.
Good evening. I'm from Helping Hands.
Hello. Come in, do.
He sidles in, trying to take his eyes off her cleavage.
Is this the right place? I mean, have I,
Yes. This is the right place.
Panting?
No, that's the way I always breathe. And your name?
Twist, madam. Sam Twist.
Do sit down.
He sits on the sofa, clutching his briefcase over his lap. She sits teasingly close. Sam's fidgety.
Yes, well, where's the baby? Oh, look.
Sam goes to the sideboard and picks up the baby photo.
Oh, delightful. And so like you, too. Yes, well, madam, I know that you're wanting to get out, and I have no wish to delay you, so if you just show me where the little baby is.
Oh, come here and relax, Mr. Twist.
Relax? No, thank you, madam. Not while I'm on duty. Well, madam, where is the baby, please?
I haven't got a baby. It's my niece.
Oh.
Sit down.
Sam gulps and moves falteringly to the sofa.
No.
Oh, please, Mr. Twist, don't make it difficult for me.
Oh, actually, you're making it a little bit difficult for me, madam.
Well, I'll explain, Mr. Twist. You see, I have deceived you. I don't really need a babysitter.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll just be going.
But I do need a man.
Mrs. Panting.
You will help me, won't you?
Depends what you want.
You.
Why me?
Why me?
Well, it could be any man, really. Just, I thought he'd better keep the whole thing on a professional basis. I must have a man by 8 o'clock.
Yes, well, we only supply Helping Hands. Why 8 o'clock?
Because that's when he gets home.
Oh, so yes, does he? Who?
Mr. Panting.
She turns from him.
My husband. Oh. Madam.
He neglects me.
Oh. I find that difficult to believe.
He ignores me.
Well, it's possible.
He takes me for granted.
Surely not.
I know he loves me, but I want him to show it more.
Ask him to have a little chat with him.
No, it's no good. I've tried. No, he needs a lesson.
So do I. I mean, that he does, yes.
I've got to make him jealous, you see.
That's a ticket.
He must find me in the arms of another man.
Oh, you're so right.
At 8 o'clock.
On the dot.
Now do you understand?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Panting, I... No! No!
Please, Mr. Twist, it's nearly 8 o'clock.
Will you stay away from me, you dangerous lady?
He's never late. He'll be here within seconds.
Oh, my lord.
He'll catch us together anyway. You might as well make it look good. Kiss me.
Madam. Mate.
Kiss me. Kiss me.
Backing into the bedroom, he falls on the bed. Mrs. Panting throws herself on him. They fall off entwined in the eiderdown as Mr. Panting arrives.
Penny!
She holds Sam's head to her bosom.
Let me go, you beast! Who can I help it if I'm irresistibly attracted to other men?
Mr. Panting, I can explain everything. I come from helping hands, you let go, please!
His trousers drop.
My braces.
I can explain everything.
Your wife, my braces. It all started with the baby, sir.
He punches Sam. Penny Panting goes to her husband.
Did you hurt your hand?
They kiss. Sam sits up woozily, then falls back unconscious. Back at Helping Hands, the men are playing cards. Miss Cooling reads out a missive.
Attractive man required next week to model for our photographer.
Oh, morning. Oh, sorry. Blew off.
Francis Courtney reads it, then stands back, posturing, puffing out his chest, turning his head profile and pouting his lips. Miss Cooling pouts back, impressed. The lads watch.
Aye, aye.
Francis, flattered, sits.
Dive.
The chair collapses.
Yes, madam. Right away. Thank you. Yes, certainly. Thank you. Here we are. Job for you.
As a model?
Not yet. Lady wants someone to take her pet for a walk. It's a lovely day. Do you the world of good.
Ooh, it's a nice address.
Francis rings the doorbell.
Good day, good day. I'm from Helping Hands. I understand you want me to take your pet out for some fresh air.
Oh, yes. I got such an awful cold. I can't go out.
Oh, dear. Well, never mind. Where is the little chap?
She's holding onto the arm of a chimp.
Oh,
Well, Helping Hands said they could do anything.
And so we will. What's his name?
Yoki.
Yoki.
Don't let him out of your sight.
No. Come on, Yoki.
Yoki, looking smart in his dungarees, takes Francis's hand and the two set off together down the path.
Which way? This way? That way? Oh, down here. All right. Come along. Nice walk, shall we? Come along, then.
Later, queuing for a bus.
I don't care what you say. You're not bringing that thing on here and that's final.
But he's tired of walking, and besides, I want to give him a proper outing. And the best way to see London is from the top of a bus.
Not from the top of this one, mate. Great airy thing.
I am not. I...
Hold tight!
I've a good mind to report you to the RSPCA, cheeky monkey.
Yoki looks up.
No offence. Yes, the British Transport Commission should hear about this. I've never been treated like this before in my life. Taxi! Taxi!
A black cab pulls up.
Can you take us to...
I'll take you, but not your brother.
I beg your pardon. We've had a long walk and we're very tired.
Why don't you climb in a tree and have a kip?
Thank you very much and good night. Charming. You see that? Do you hear what he said? Oh. Ooh, do you want to go somewhere? Ah, I see. You want to see your friends. And so you shall. Just in time for tea.
At the zoo, Yoki joins in the chimps' tea party. Francis looks on lovingly as Yoki and the other chimps slurp from teacups and tuck into plates of fruit. Back at Helping Hands, Bert's got a job for Lily.
Morning, Lil.
Morning, boss. Is it worth taking my coat off?
Yeah, I got a beaut for you today. Just collecting invitation cards and being pleasant.
I say, that'll be nice.
A sign reads, The Ruby Room, today, Connoisseurs de Londres wine tasting. Lily, in an elegant gown, collects invitations as dapper male guests enter, sampling an assortment of wines laid out on a table. A mustachioed man gives her the eye. She smiles up at another young connoisseur.
Thank you.
He looks her up and down.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Well, that seems to be everybody, Mr. V.
And quite a nice crowd of people they are, too.
Yes, very.
Is there any further service I can render? I mean, just collecting these cards in my hot little hands doesn't really add up to sweated labour, does it?
please be our guest.
Oh, I see. Thanks.
She saunters in with the host.
Are you a lover of the grapes, Mr. Bean?
No, actually, no. I never know what to do with the pips, you know, flick away, collect in the palm of the hand or spit. Quite a social problem, don't you find?
Well, I never really... Will you excuse me?
A waiter.
Madame, for you, a soupçon?
Oh, really? What kind of soup?
Soup? Madam, there is no soup.
But you just said there was.
I did not, madam. I inquired whether you would care to taste our 1952 vintage.
Oh, rather. Oh, such a pretty colour. Rather like Coca-Cola. Thanks, yes, I'll try it. Jewel.
She knocks it back.
Madam, please. Please don't unset it.
Wow. Oh, that's what they really call a drink. Yes, I'll have some more. Thank you. Fill it up.
Fill?
Yes, to the brim. I've had a taster. Now let's have a proper drink.
Madam, you don't seem to understand. You're supposed to taste several wines.
Oh, don't worry. I will. Come on, fill it up.
She raises the glass. He pours just a taster. She holds it out for more.
Not exactly heavy-handed, are you?
Reluctantly, he fills it.
Oh, well, here's cream on your salad.
She takes a huge gulp and chokes.
Tickle.
The waiter looks on amazed as she drains the glass.
Nice.
As she offers her glass again, the waiter hugs the bottle protectively. The young guest watches with interest as Lily, now quite unsteady on her feet, tips three of the sample glasses into one.
By George.
She clucks it back and wobbles precariously, now very drunk. She tries to focus on the room. Everything a blur, she's seeing much more than double. She flicks her head soberingly, then turns and prods the mustachioed man in the back.
Hello.
Powerful stuff.
I see you're at the Nuit Saint-Georges.
Have I?
A dignified wine, don't you think?
Oh, very.
He turns away. Lily slides onto her knees.
Yes. Tell me, have you ever...
He looks for her.
What are you doing down there?
Giving up. But I can't.
Come along, young lady. Up!
No handling, if you please.
But I was only...
I know your sort. That'll do.
She lurches off and spins with an old gent, propelling herself back again.
It's my soul. Well, it certainly was powerful stuff.
She staggers off, bumping the waiter. He twirls, just managing to balance his tray full of drinks.
Woohoo! Marvellous! Did you see that? I say, do do it again.
Madam.
She slaps him on the back and he falls headlong, knocking a table and guests over like skittles.
Yeah. Just shows you, doesn't it? First time must have been beginner's luck.
I really don't...
Night-night, I'm so sleepy.
Well, you can't sleep here, madam.
I say, what's going on?
I don't know, I'm dropping off.
Mr. V,
get her off me, will you? If my wife were
here... Wife? You're a married man making advances to me.
I didn't.
Chuck him out.
Mr. Bean, please.
Listen, this is the second time I've been insulted at this do.
Mr. Bean, this is not a do.
Don't you speak to me like that or I'll do you.
I'm most terribly sorry.
All right, yes. I'm going. And I wouldn't stay here if you paid me.
She goes.
Really, sir, I can't apologize enough.
The young man.
Come on, gorgeous.
She spins again.
Hold up there. Let's both get out of here together. Hmm?
She slaps him hard, throwing him backwards into the others.
Disgraceful. A load of drunks.
Miss Cooling arranges flowers in a vase, then puts them on Bert's desk.
We've got every single one of them working.
On the day we've got our first office flowers, too. The sign of success. Flowers in the office. Isn't it wonderful?
Cigar?
No, I don't smoke, thank you.
Come in. You again.
I'd like to know what's more likes than me to be heed.
Miss Cooling?
Oh, not a growl. It's you I distinctly want for a Thorcus too. You to positively Thorcus too, and you I'm definitely going to Thorcus too, come what may load.
That's right, yes. Just tell all the details to my secretary. Miss Cooling?
Oh, perhaps I will. Perhaps this little lady, we shall completely understand the simply measure out to offer you. Can I command your full attention, Herd Maidler?
A lovely day, yes.
I'm not here discussing it, the weather ebbed.
Yes, I think we ought to listen together.
Now, you deal with it, Miss Cooling, please.
Really, sir. There's no understab or reluctance in your eardrops to listen to my other, completely beyond my comprehend. And your pretense not to understand the simple syllable which I was uttering.
Are you from the sanitary department?
I didn't catch that.
He said something about the guttering.
I did, knockers.
Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with the guttering.
Even so, it says in the third or fourth line which knockers internally poed or externally poed, and it's your responsibility, you can sign it for that.
Ah, very interesting. You understand, Miss Cooley?
No.
What do you mean, knockers? Do you think I'll come in here and stand and talk a Doppelo Dutchery?
Dutch!
He's Dutch!
We have a man.
A Lerlini garbage
now,
man.
Don't get excited. Listen. This man, very clever. He speaks 16 languages. You come back.
I am not Dutch.
Now, look here, mate. I'm a very, very busy man.
What do you think? I come in and stand for a loafery?
He wants a chauffeur.
We don't compete with car hire firms. Try down the road.
I'm going, but I recoil. To blazer with solicitors' lessons, all forms of communicare, save the English voice and its language, my voice and my language. This is an obsession with mode, to convey to you the fullest message for an understab, and by growth, I will foredoom that. I don't know what your little grames, but I'll play to the bitter hovers. By grabbers, I will.
How dare you!
And when I recoil, alert and refresh, you shall understand. Cripes!
He goes.
And you?
Another man enters.
Handy? Handy, who's Handy?
I am.
Look at him, I say.
Thank you. Won't you sit down?
No time. I'm Amalgamated Scrap Iron.
You must be a millionaire.
Four times over.
Do sit down.
I've already said no. Listen, do you provide substitutes?
No. This is a respectable firm.
You. Do you know the hospital up the road?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, keep my place for me in the outpatients department today.
Eh?
Didn't I make myself clear?
Oh, yes, of course. But I just don't understand. I mean, after all, you're a millionaire.
Four times over.
And here you are going to a national health hospital.
It's the principle of the thing. I buy my stamp every week and I have my money's worth. I really can't spare the time to vegetate in that waiting room. I've got four board meetings today and I must take over International Screws before 5 o'clock. Well, will you do it, yes or no?
Don't you worry about a thing. I'll assign my best operative to the job.
You won't. I want you. The head man or the deal's off.
Very well. Have a cigar.
Don't smoke them. Horrible things. Neither should you.
He stubs Bert's out.
Ooh, what a stench. Here, have a flower to get rid of it.
He chucks a flower down and goes. Bert puts it in his buttonhole. At the hospital, a prim matron.
Good morning, Doctor. Good morning, Sister. Now, this is important. You'll be the first to see Sir Theodore when he arrives, and I want you to telephone me at once.
Yes, Matron.
At once?
Yes, Matron.
This is a vital inspection. I've instructed everybody. What he says goes. Is that quite clear?
Yes, Matron, but how do I recognize him? I've never seen him.
Oh, yes. Well, he's not exactly handsome, but I'm told he has a certain rugged grandeur, and he always wears a flower on his buttonhole.
The sister smiles.
Yes, Matron.
She primps her hair, then has a look at the waiting room. Bert is sitting in a suit with his buttonhole.
Doctor?
The doctor comes out.
Doctor, he's here.
No.
Our phone matron.
The doctor approaches Bird.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
This is an unexpected honour.
Is it?
Why, of course, sir.
Well, that's very nice of you.
Matron will be along in a moment. Would you like to wait in the examination room?
Oh, yes, I don't mind. Thank you. Nice people.
He follows the doctor in, greeting the young sister.
Good morning.
Hello.
The first patient, please, sister.
Yes, doctor.
The matron enters.
Good morning, welcome indeed. We feel most honoured.
How do you do?
Would you please follow me, Sir Theodore?
His face falls.
Sir Theodore?
He follows her into the ward.
Morning, Matron. Morning, sir.
Morning,
sister.
Bert wanders up to a bed. He bends over, peering at the patient's newspaper. The matron and a portly sister watch from a distance.
Watch closely, sister. You're seeing the world's most inspired diagnostician at work.
Bert winces.
He must be inspired to learn about a varicose vein by studying the patient's scalp.
Watch, listen, learn.
Never.
What do you mean, never?
On that track in the mud, never.
Oh, yeah, I've been following that horse.
That's his trouble. Only punters follow him, never other horses.
Now, don't put me off.
I'm doing you a favour. That's not a horse, it's a cow.
Mind your own business.
Okay.
To the nurses.
His funeral.
The sister raises her brows in alarm.
Nurse, side ward.
Bert bumps into a blanket carrying nurse.
Oh,
ooh, I'm sorry.
Nurse.
Oh, I'm sorry, sister.
Well, that's much too heavy a load for a little thing like you. Well, don't just stand there. Give it a hand.
The flabbergasted sister smiles icily.
Let me help you, nurse.
The sister, taking the pile, walks into a patient's trolley.
Hey, what's the hell? Oh, cheer up, chicken. It's all right, here. Good for you. Where would we all be if we didn't help each other, eh? Right, let's see some more.
He pecks the sister's cheek. She's in shock.
All great men are slightly eccentric.
Yes, matron.
Yes, matron.
The sister touches her cheek, a smile playing on her lips. The nurse sees.
All right, nurse.
Matron escorts Bert to maternity and they look at the babies through a glass partition.
Goochie goochie. Little baskets. I mean, what little baskets you keep the little baskets in?
Yes.
I love kids.
Have you any of your own, Sir Theodore?
Well, I can't say I have. I can't say I haven't.
Well, I always say that really brilliant men are a little absent-minded.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, young buxom nurses line up in their stockings, suspenders and bras as a doctor tests their hearts. The matron enters with Bert.
We give our nurses a regular check-up, of course.
Bert purses his lips lustfully.
Well, now, is there anything else we can show you?
I think I'll rest here a while.
He sits, fanning himself with his hat. The scrap millionaire enters the waiting area, stopping the young sister.
You're late.
Where is he?
Where's who?
The man I hired to keep my place.
What man?
The man with a face like a relief map of the Himalayas.
And a flower?
Well, yes, he had a flower. He's from Helping Hands. Where is he?
The sister rushes to the office phone. The pretty nurse answers.
Ward 10.
Emergency.
Yes, sister.
She flies out.
Yes.
Sister.
What is it?
It isn't.
Isn't what?
I mean, he isn't.
Who?
That man.
Which man isn't what?
That man with matron isn't Sir Theodore.
Goodness gracious.
The portly sister rushes to the phone.
Hello, matron. That man's not Sir Theodore. He's an imposter.
What?
The matron almost faints but recovers and rushes off. Bert has taken the doctor's place and is placing the end of a stethoscope onto a pretty nurse's chest. The matron rushes in and unhooks the instrument from his ears.
You're not Sir Theodore.
Lady, I never said I was.
Leave this instant.
Yes, right. Well, some other time, then, eh? Any time you need a helping hand, tell all your friends.
He pats the matron's cheek. At the office, Francis is admiring his profile in a hand mirror.
Yes, that's definitely my best side.
Best side for what, Mr. Courtney?
Oh, nothing. I was just...
You were just rather hoping the photography job might go your way.
What photography job?
Would you like me to pencil you in?
Well, I must admit I would. I used to photograph awfully well as a child. All my relatives still treasure portraits of me. I was curly.
Oh, you weren't.
Yes.
Oh, how lovely you must have been.
Oh, do suggest me for the job. I'm most anxious to know how I'd photograph now in my maturity. I haven't been done professionally for ages.
Leave it to me.
Thank you.
Francis waltzes into the studio. The photographer and assistant look shocked.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm your model. Can't believe it, eh? Well, I quite understand. There's no point in my being modest about it. I just do happen to have the perfect face for photography.
The photographer pulls Francis's chin, examining his profile.
We're awfully grateful to you, I must say. We tried all the top models in London, and none of them would do it. Beg your pardon, would do, I mean.
Poor fellows. Some of us have got it, and some of us haven't.
You've got it, all right.
And soon thousands of poster hoardings up and down the country will have it too. My face.
Won't you sit down?
Francis sits.
Well, gentlemen, ready when you are.
Let's go.
Take your time. I'm rather difficult to light, I know.
You're lit.
Oh, no, your job, I must say. What's the product we're selling?
A beekeeper's helmet.
Keep quite still, please.
He's placed onto his head. He's given a sign to hold. Take the sting out of beekeeping with the coverall helmet. Don't let them be a bee nuisance to you. At the offices, Sam is desperate for a cigarette. He screws up an empty packet, then rummages in his jacket pocket. Nothing. He tries an ashtray, then a tin on the mantelpiece. He rifles the bin, finds and opens a cigar tube, and gets his finger stuck in it. Even Handy's cigar box is empty. Wretched, he slumps at the desk, wipes his brow with an ink blotter, and chews a strip of paper. Lily comes in. He jumps.
How's it down, Dad?
Morning, Sam.
Good morning. Good morning, you say? Look at that. You're late.
Well, only a minute. No one else has arrived.
Oh, only a minute, she says. Charming, isn't it? What would have happened if Julius Caesar had only been a minute before the Spanish Armada was... What am I talking about? I don't know.
Sam, are you in some kind of trouble?
The worst.
What's her name?
Oh, please. It's worse than that.
Look, Sam, tell me all about it, and probably all your worries will disappear like a puff of smoke.
He pulls off the tube.
Oh, gracious me, if you've got a hangover, it must be a real corker. Now, look, take my tip.
Corker tip. No.
Sam, what on earth is the matter?
I want it.
Lily eyes him.
Oh, cigarette, damn it, cigarette.
Well, for goodness sake, have one.
Can't.
Why not?
Giving it up.
Well, then don't have one.
I want one.
Well, then have a... Oh, look, make up your mind.
I have made up my mind to give it up.
Well, then there's an end to it.
I want one.
Sam, how long have you been like this?
Oh, since yesterday lunchtime, really. Oh, this is hell.
I've got the answer. I've got it. A sweet.
A what?
A sweet.
Oh, not the wrong earth, but you make fat.
Well, I couldn't stand a day's inactivity without a sweet.
Self-indulgence here. No, oh, willpower.
Look who's talking.
Well, I can afford to talk if I want to, colour. After all, I've been without it for 24 hours now.
Without what?
Cigarette. Gosh. Put that in. You just made me say
Sam!
That, didn't you?
Oh, look at my sweet. Look.
Trying to make me... Sorry, darling. I'm very sorry, sir. I'm smoking. Smoke. See? Can't do without it. I must have a smoke! I must!
He rushes out up the entrance steps, belts along the street, dodging an old lady, and hurtles straight into a tobacconist's. He chases out with his prize, opening the packet as he hammers back along the street, nearly knocking over a man, and then swinging violently on an iron railing, he propels himself down the steps and back breathless into helping hands. He sits fumbling with the packet, spilling fags all over the desk. Eventually, he lights one and takes a long, satisfying puff.
Better now?
Oh, yeah. So what a rally certainly earned his knighthood.
Fag hanging from his lips, he draws repeatedly.
Oh, and it's strange, eh? Just a few puffs of that. Oh, and it makes the whole world look sort of all... most...
He faints to the floor.
Sam!
He rushes to help.
Sam!
A stream of smoke curls from his mouth.
Hello. It'll pass away.
Well, so will you by the look of you.
Don't worry. Oh, it's always like this. When you start smoking again after a layoff.
Can you get up?
He points to the table.
Cigarette, you.
Sam, no.
Please, Lil. Cigarette, please.
No, you are going to give it up.
Well, I can't give it up, Lil. I can't try six times, it always ends like this. You know that? Let's face it, I'm a slave to him. I'm a slave.
Six times? It's disgraceful. No, this time you are going through with it.
Oh, no. I can't.
Yes, you can. All you need is a helping hand. Funny, isn't it? A helping hand who needs a helping hand himself. Well, I'm going to help you.
He looks up.
How?
Well, I promise I won't touch a single sweet, and you won't have a single draw. Together we'll share the experience of doing without. No sweets?
No draws!
Francis makes his way up to a front door and rings the bell. Inside, an angry woman shouts at her husband. The husband goes to answer the door.
Yeah, just a moment.
Oh, good day, Mr. Trelawney. I'm from helping...
Oh, yes, yes, I know. Come in.
You can start work at once.
Thank you.
Now then, my dear, would you kindly repeat what you said just now?
Francis stands between Mr. and Mrs. Trelawney.
Verstanden. Raus mit ihm, aber sofort!
The lady wishes me to leave at once, sir.
Oh, does she? Well, I'm paying you, and I say you stay.
Looking shocked at her language, Francis covers his ears.
Gracious me. Well, what's she saying?
Eh?
Yeah, you're supposed to listen, now translate.
No, I couldn't, not that, not in front of a lady.
See, Miss Shookiness, idiot, this is the rint, we see.
Oh, I say.
I'm not interested in what you say, what did she say?
No, I couldn't. No.
Trevor.
Ah, that's better. Trevor.
Well, I know that, but names the same in any language. What I want to know is what on earth my wife and I are arguing about.
Ha! Huh.
Look here, my dear, would you care to elaborate?
She points, spitting her words vehemently, then grabs up a vase.
Apparently, if I can't leave immediately, there's to be a physical assault.
Stand your ground.
on you.
If only you'd let me finish translating.
She grabs Francis's ear.
Very well, then, since you've an interpreter here, there's no need for you to be ignorant of my sorrow and anger.
Is it this?
It is this.
Yeah, well, even I can get that.
Quite.
Wenn eine Frau eine neue Frisur hat.
When a wife has a new hairstyle.
Und einen neuen Hut.
And a new hat.
Erwartet sie, dass ihr Mann davon Notiz nimmt.
She likes it to be commented on.
Und wenn das nicht tut,
yeah,
dann
but,
kann
but
das
when it is not so,
nur einen Grund haben.
Yes, that only means one thing.
Dass seine Interessen woanders liegen.
The husband's interest is elsewhere.
Wahrscheinlich. Bei der neuen Schlampe von einer stillen Topistin in seinem...
Probably with that old trollop of a secretary at his office.
Well, is that all?
Alles!
All?
Oh, you silly girl.
Wagst du es, mich ein dummes Mädel zu nennen?
Don't call me a silly girl.
Oh, but you are.
Mr. Trelawney looks at Francis.
Eine tief, leidenschaftliche und enorm sensitive Frau.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm a deeply passionate and sensitive woman.
Oh, I know, I know.
Du behandelst mich aber nicht als eine solche.
Well, you don't behave towards me as if I was one.
How can you say that?
Für eine ganze Woche hast du mir nicht ein einziges Zeichen deiner Liebe gegeben.
For a whole week you've shown no sign of love towards me.
Well, that's only because I was too tired.
Ja, gewiss, meiner müde.
Hers tired of me.
Oh, no, no, darling.
Es ist alles das Frauenzimmer von einer Sekretärin.
It's that brassy stenographer.
Francis's face puckers.
Carol, there's no need to be so convincing.
I can't help it. I think your wife's got a point.
Oh, do you? Yeah, well, you're here to translate, not to pass judgment.
You don't come from a broken home, do you?
As a matter of fact, I don't.
Well, I do. Beg of you, I beg of you, think of your children.
Ja, aber hören Sie.
We haven't got any children.
You won't have if you go on like this. You tired, you with your hats. You ought to be thoroughly ashamed of yourselves, the pair of you.
He slumps on the sofa, sobbing. Mr. and Mrs. Trelawney look down at him.
Please, please don't upset yourself.
I can't help it.
Trudy, darling, you're back in English. Does that mean...
It means that our trivialities are as nothing compared to the profound emotional turmoil of this delicate and wounded soul.
Well, make up, you two. That's the only thing that'll help me. If only for my sake. Make up.
She looks at her husband.
All right, then. All right.
Yes. It's nice.
Bert has a visitor.
Seconds out. Lefty wins it. Good bloody have that. Bert Andy, I thought it'd be you. A little older, of course, but I'd recognise that ugly mug anywhere.
Well, you should blimey up to make it like this. It's marvellous, isn't it? Let's sit down and have a necker.
Wish I could, but this is business. Can't stop. Listen, you've got four open hands free tonight. I need a couple of seconds.
You're not going back in the ring.
No, only as far as the corner. Bert, I'm in management.
No.
I've got me a fighter. Yeah, Dynamite Dan Grimsby.
Never heard of him.
You will after the night. His first fight in the fairground booth.
Who's he fighting?
Mickey McGee.
Massive Mickey?
Yeah.
Are you going punchy?
Listen, I tell you, my kid's dynamite.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Look, I tell you what I'll do. I'll come there myself tonight just to G him on.
Will you?
Yeah, and don't worry about the seconds. They're on the house.
Good old Bert.
Lefty slaps Bert, sending him flying. Later in the ring, Dynamite Dan sits in his corner looking over at Massive Mickey. He gulps nervously as the big bruiser shadow boxes with his massive gloves. Skinny Gabriel Dimple is at Dan's corner, a bottle in one hand.
Oh, hulking great brute, and such a show-off.
He chats to the edgy Dan.
Bit nervy. There, not a worry. Just one big whack in his fat belly. That'll knock the wind out of him, you'll see.
Who, me?
Yeah,
do you mind? Listen, I give the advice around here. Massage his back.
With a faint smile, Gabriel rubs Dan's back. He takes a swig from the bottle, grimaces and spits the liquid over Dan and the trainers. Dan falls forward on his gloves.
So sorry, I do beg your pardon.
Brian, you pinched cold.
Hurt my finger, hurt my finger. Oh, get us one off.
Bert watches with concern as Dan holds his ungloved hand.
You'll be all right, son.
No one, Lefty, this is a right horrible sprain. I can't fight tonight.
You've got to.
With one hand, Mr. Vincent... How can you be so inhuman?
Ah, shut up! Listen, Dan!
He's a very hurt man.
The ref looks at Dan, who shakes his head.
Ready?
No, not tonight.
Hey,
talks to the compere.
He's only sprained his little finger.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. Dynamite Dan Grimsby is forced to withdraw owing to a sprained little finger. In place of the main band...
Massive Mickey McGee roars with laughter.
Oh, you unsympathetic lump. Why didn't somebody punch him on the nose?
Why don't you? It's all your fault.
Gabriel resolutely drops the bottle, disappears under the ring, and re-emerges gloved in a white vest and pantaloons. Back in the ring, he does a little knees up on the spot, eyeballing McGee through his wire-rimmed spectacles. Bert watches in horror.
Come here, guys!
Gabriel flexes his scrawny biceps, then taps McGee on the back.
Hey, you! Come on back and fight! Well, what are you waiting for, you hulking great brute? Have at you, or do I have to strike the first blow? Very well, then. Don't say I didn't warn you.
He thumps McGee, winding him. McGee snarls and advances.
Oh, no, I'm not ready!
Gabriel retreats, bumping into the compere, who falls out of the ring. Bert can't look. Gabriel takes a running jump. McGee catches him and then throws him into the two trainers. Bert shouts to the ref.
Hey, ref! He can't let him! He's got his glasses on!
One of McGee's trainers sets upon Bert. In the ring, Gabriel is nimbly mincing about, dodging McGee's wild swipes, twisting fleetly. Bert jostles in the crowd. Gabriel ducks a right hook from McGee and, anticipating another, drops to the floor and crawls through his legs. He taps confused McGee's shoulder, then crawls under again, disorientating the big man. Bert cheers him on. Gabriel ducks and dives the punches. Gabriel attacks, biffing McGee's chest. Angered McGee retaliates.
Run, guy! Run! Faster!
Gabriel runs in a circle as McGee takes pot shots. As Gabriel dances about the ring, his pantaloons slide to his knees. The ref and compere laugh hysterically, as does McGee. As Gabriel bends sheepishly to pull up his drawers, McGee draws back his fist.
He's coming!
Gabriel straightens, nutting McGee's chin. The big man falls to the floor. McGee shakes his head woozily, then passes out. Bert and the ref hold Gabriel's arm up in a victory salute. Poor Gabriel passes out. Inside an apartment, a fat man answers his phone.
Yes, I see. How very disappointing. I shall have to make alternative arrangements. Take care. Goodbye.
The sinister-looking man puts down the receiver and picks up a helping hand flyer by the phone. Taking up the phone once more, he begins to dial. Miss Cooling is in the office.
Helping Hands Limited. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry, sir. I can't understand. Too loud now. I still can't understand. Now, sir, what was it you wanted? Yes? Yes. The what? Are you sure? Well, I'm terribly sorry, but I find it very difficult to understand you. Yes, of course I got a note of it. Yes. Fourth Bridge. Rest assured, sir. Goodbye.
Sam overhears. The sinister man, fat cigar in mouth, plays patience. Miss Cooling is in a flap.
Oh, I wish I'd turned it down.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't. I mean, this to me is... It's adventure. I mean, it's like... what's the name of that thing? The 39 steps. Or the train and all.
Oh, dear. I didn't hear him very well. It was so indefinite.
But these things usually are. The agent, cool, alert, and debonair. He's only ever given a rendezvous. He receives his instructions there. I might even be contacted on the train. Scotland. A lot of hydroelectric stuff up there. I bet you this has something to do with atomic energy.
Oh, gracious! I do hope you don't finish up in Russia.
Well, if I do, Miss Cooling, I shall behave myself as an ex-corporal of the Pioneer Corps should. Name, rank, number, and keep your hand off me shoveling this a lot.
Don't go. Think of brainwashing.
How can they wash what isn't there? Well, by that, I mean, of course, I don't know anything. Yet.
Looking at his watch.
Excuse me, Miss Cooling, my train.
He fixes his trilby on his head, slaps her back and swaggers to the door, lifting the collar on his Mac.
Well, au revoir, Miss Cooling. Or maybe, goodbye.
Oh, dear.
Smiling, he tries for the door handle, but gets the wrong side. Looking every inch a secret agent, Sam sits in a first-class compartment of a train, checking his watch. Two shifty-looking men, one with a briefcase, sidle in. One sits beside Sam, the other sits opposite, eyeing him threateningly.
Going all the way?
Sam's tight-lipped.
Uh-huh. Well, that's our man, then.
The man opposite puts his hand in his coat pocket. Sam knits his brow. The man pulls out a pack of cards. The other plonks his suitcase onto Sam's lap, providing a table onto which the cards are dealt. Sam peeks at his card. It's the Ace of Spades. He smiles nervously. Later, Sam enters a dining carriage and is shown to a seat opposite an elegant-looking lady in a fur coat and pillbox hat. She picks up a drink with her long-gloved hand, stares at him a while, then her eye twitches, giving her the appearance of winking. Sam eyes her suspiciously. She puts a cigarette holder to her lips, and noticing the cigarette has gone out, fumbles in her bag. Coolly, Sam offers his lighter, igniting the flame. She lights it, then sexily blows out a plume of smoke at Sam.
Thank you.
You're not English.
She narrows her eyes at him.
You're not Chinese, so what?
So this. We might be on the same journey.
She stares wide-eyed.
Of course we are.
She twitches. Sam winks back. She winks again. Alarmed by Sam's winking, she backs from the carriage, her twitching, him winking. She throws her newspaper at him. And with a final wink goes, Sam reads an ad in the paper.
Trend of the month. Persevere.
Spurred on, he pursues her into the walkway, tapping her shoulder.
Okay. I'm persevering.
So I see, and I don't like it.
Ah, quit the pretense, baby. I'm your man.
What?
I'm very glad we met. I wasn't altogether looking forward to you jumping off the train.
Huh?
But that's okay by me. If you say we jump together, then we jump. Can't we talk this over somewhere less public?
She slaps his face, sending Sam wheeling to a tray-carrying waiter.
Sorry, mate.
He wipes his arm.
Brown wings.
He goes to the toilet and stares intently into the mirror, geeing himself up.
This is it, kid. We're approaching the bridge. Now listen, you've got to jump out. There's not going to be any contact on the train. When you jump, let every muscle go slack. Not now, stupid. When you jump.
Okay.
You're not nervous anymore, are you?
No.
No. Okay, kid. Near the bridge now. Your rendezvous. The bridge. Get going!
He bumps into the door.
Maybe. Maybe there is a contact on the train. Waiting for you. Yes, that's it. Waiting till the very last minute. Yes, to test your nerve. Yes. To see if you will prepare to jump.
He's almost sick. He goes back into the walkway, checks his watch, then pulls down a window on a door. As he looks furtively up and down, an army officer comes up, tapping him on the shoulder, trying to squeeze past.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir. Certainly, sir. Have you any orders for me, sir?
Orders? No, I just want to pass.
Are you sure, sir?
Quite sure.
Don't you want me for anything, sir?
No, I do not.
The officer marches off. Sam checks the time again and shudders. Steeling himself, he opens the carriage door. The wind buffets him, blowing off his hat as he clambers out of the train. He manages to push the door shut and hangs on for grim life. Suddenly, an express train hurtles along in the other direction. He braces himself. The train passes. Sam dangles precariously, ready to jump. Then, as they approach the fourth bridge, he lets go. Sam bobs up, spluttering out of a man-sized puddle between the tracks. Grimacing, he spits out a jet of muddy water. Wide-eyed, he looks about the deserted bridge. He tries to whistle, but chokes on his dirty wet fingers. He clambers out of the puddle and stands dripping wet, shivering as he looks hopefully up and down the bridge.
Help me, Nance. Oh, yes. Oh, it's you. Oh, yes, most honour we are, sir. Trust everything's going according to plan. As you instructed, my man went to the fourth bridge.
Went where?
To the fourth bridge. Isn't that what you said?
No, it isn't. What I wanted was a fourth at bridge.
Oh, a fourth at bridge.
On the fourth bridge, rain lashes down from the night sky. Sam, drenched and freezing, paces to keep warm. He consults his watch, hopefully. The whole team are congregated in the office. Miss Cooling holds up a sign. Ideal House Exhibition. Demonstrations by Helping Hands Limited. The organisation that's always ready to lend a hand.
This is it, Mr. Handy.
Thank you, Miss Cooling. Publicity. It does not matter how well a firm is doing, it has got to have publicity.
Yeah.
Shut up. And that could very well be the finest publicity that this organisation could possibly have.
The exhibition throngs with people. Delia demonstrates a kitchen.
Obviously, in a kitchen like this, work is a luxurious pleasure. And you can do so many things at once.
Infield Hopping's home is everything for the bachelor.
Jolly good setup here, old chap.
Oh, thanks, sir.
But the PC's missing.
The PC, sir?
Rather. Popsy cupboard.
No, sir. We mustn't be naughty, must we?
Eh? Use your manual control, and it will go as fast as you like. Observe.
The floor cleaner goes out of control, catapulting Delia through a flat and into the bachelor pad. The punter grins.
I say, there is a Popsy cupboard after all.
Gabriel's high up a wall, demonstrating a safety belt harness for cleaning windows.
Perfect safety, but perfect. Fixed in a flash, and unfixed, likewise.
A crowd of kids watch as Francis plays with the Scalectrics track. Lily, a flowing negligee covering a swimming costume, ungainfully attempts to get into a demonstration bath for Salome bath bubbles. Once in, she smiles sheepishly at the crowd, lifting out a bubble-smothered leg.
None of you children like to rock on the rocking horse? Don't you want it?
Ride it yourself.
Yes, I know what you want. Yes, come along. What about the swing? Anyone like a swing? None of you like a swing?
No.
Well, I'll have a swing myself. There, just to show you. Isn't it lovely? Look at me.
He flies off. Landing up on a display sign, Lily, trying to act sexy, writhes in the bath, coyly rubbing the bubbles over her face.
The all-purpose safety belt makes window cleaning oh so cozy and pays for itself in only 6 tiny months. Ridiculous.
A seesaw.
Now, won't any little boy or girl sit on the other end and have a rock with me?
No.
Well, a grown-up, then. To unharness the all-purpose safety belt, all you do is...
He plummets onto the seesaw. Francis shoots up and lands in Lily's foamy bath.
I'm terribly sorry, Lily.
You fade away.
Who's the boiler?
Sam standing before a large bed in a dressing gown.
And may I ask you to move closer? Thank you very much. I do not wish to raise my voice too loudly for fear of waking the people in the next house. And may I introduce you also to the bed of the century. Here it is. Not whatever it is that you like to do in bed. The bed of the century helps you to do it better. If you do not believe me, madam, come to bed with me. Ah, but first of all, the neighbours may be watching.
He flicks a switch, the curtains close.
That's better. And so, to bed, and we will find out.
He flicks another bedside switch and the bed covers magically slide down. He hops on the bed, flicks again, and the coverlet glides up over his feet, and then his tummy.
A little television, perhaps.
A TV rises out of the bed end.
The early morning cup of tea.
A tea tray rises from the left-hand side.
Or maybe you feel like a little snack? La bouffée.
A rotisserie appears on the right.
Perhaps
like a nice and cosy read.
A bookshelf flips out towards the bed.
Willa. Or maybe you've come to bed merely to sleep. Hmm? Can't happen, of course. Very well. Just recline on the bed of the century.
He sinks down.
The position not quite right, no? Well, how often that can happen. Very well. The bed of the century will solve the small problem for you. Merely recline. You must not move. The mobile mold to the body mattress will do it all for you. Watch, watch, watch.
Everything goes at once.
What's going on?
The bed bends in a bow, trapping Sam in the middle.
There's something wrong with the bed, Fred!
The rotisserie and TV pop up and down.
Wagon train! No.
The rotisserie rises up with a potting on it. The bookshelf and tea tray flip wildly as Sam is pitched and tossed about the bed. He grabs the potty.
What for the pot?
An exclusive gentleman's club. An old boy reads a notice board as a receptionist looks on from behind a desk. Sam, in a porter's uniform, comes through a staff-only door and marches in with squeaky shoes. The receptionist glares at him.
Hey, you!
Sam shushes him.
You're not our Lou.
No, I'm not your Lou. Your Lou's a bit off-colour today, you see, so, I'll come to take his place.
In there? Never.
Oh, it's quite all right. I know the rule. Absolute silence.
You're not trained for it.
Oh, come, please, Sarge. What training do you need just to keep nice and quiet for a few hours? Don't worry.
Sam tiptoes to the library, pausing to give an OK sign to the receptionist. He opens the door, jumping as it creaks. Inside, he stares round at the old men reclining in leather chairs and reading. A gent standing drops a magazine. Sam, bending to pick it up, sees that the man's fly's unbuttoned. Sam quickly covers the fly with the magazine. The bewildered gent grabs the mag and tugs it from Sam. He walks off. Sam, undeterred, taps him on the back and mouths, "Your flies," flapping wing-like arms. The confused old boy also flaps his arms, then shrugs and goes. Sam, the bit between his teeth, taps again. He looks about, then waves his hand, miming a fly. He swats the old boy's head. Next, he walks his fingers down his waistcoat. The gent copies nonplussed. Sam counts down with his fingers and lifts his waistcoat flaps, grimacing wildly. Getting his drift, the old boy looks down, starts, then goes to a corner to do them up. Horrified, Sam walks over to shield him from view. Buttoned up, the old man walks out. Sam watches him go, a smile cracking on his face. Sam remembers himself, then sees a stout old gent nod off while reading. He clamps his lips, then laughs into his hanky. Pulling himself together, he sees another doddery old man overbalancing to get a book. Sam clamps his jaw, straining to hold it in. Another man snores, billowing a hanky over his face. Sam's body shakes. Knees buckling, he furrows his agonized brow, rolling his eyes in their sockets. A wig slides off a man's pate. Onto his chest. The receptionist enters.
Quiet! 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 You mustn't speak!
The receptionist drags him out. Bert enters the office. There's a new filing cabinet and progress charts adorn the walls.
Good morning, Mr. Handy. You look dazed.
I am.
He gestures about the new look room.
What's it all for?
Streamlined organization.
Anything that's necessary for the business, of course. Perhaps you'd explain.
Mr. Handy, I have made some terrible mistakes.
Ah, Miss Coolin, we're all human. You're a tower of strength to us.
Every tower needs foundations, and these are mine. Look, as soon as a job is notified, it's filed here, cross-referenced there, tabulated and costed here, assigned to the operator in question via the availability indicator, all of which, however, is secondary to the actual operative procedure.
Oh, yes, certainly, operative, yes.
Later, a cleaner shuts the door, and the new pigeonhole cabinet topples from the wall. Sending assignment cards scattering over the floor, she picks them all up, replaces the cabinet, then looks at the cards and the individually named pigeonholes, completely bewildered.
Oh, I don't suppose it'll matter.
She replaces the mad hog. The next day, Sam enters and collects the card in his hole. Francis is not far behind.
Morning.
Morning.
Francis takes his card.
Ingenious system, eh?
Yes. Oh, yes. There's no possibility of error?
None whatsoever.
Well, are you going my way?
No.
Oh, I thought we might share a taxi, you know.
I'm afraid I wouldn't be very good company.
Already thinking in Chinese.
Chinese?
Interpreting. That's my job today. Can't wait to get to it. Bye.
Bye. Chinese. Very clever. Wonder if it's true what they say. Hey, Francis! Mr. Courtney!
Later, Sam knocks at a door. An elderly Chinese lady opens up. Sam stares, surprised.
Good morning, madam.
Doushan?
Pardon?
Doushan!
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, it's quite a coincidence. A friend of mine has gone all Chinese this morning as well. Well, may I come in?
She bows, then shows him in, excitedly opening an inner door. A whole party of Chinese men and women suddenly flood the room, crowding round Sam eagerly. Sam, wide-eyed, is overwhelmed.
Hello, 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 hello,
hello. Please, wait a minute, please. Look, please. There's been a mistake. Mistake is impossible. Oh, gracious me. This must be Francis's job, this one.
Francis is waiting at the platform of a station. A train pulls in and passengers disembark.
What platform for Ely, please?
Number one, madam, over there.
Thank you. I'll show them if I need a keeper.
Uniformed schoolgirls trail behind a schoolmistress. On their blazer pockets, a dragon emblem.
Come along, girls, come on through.
Francis approaches the stout mistress.
Good morning. I'm your helping hand, I fancy.
I fancy not. Go away.
Ha ha, I get it. You expected me to be Chinese.
Chinese?
Well, we're quit. I expected your girls to be Chinese, too.
I simply don't know what you're talking about.
Don't alarm yourself, madam. As soon as I saw your girl's breast...
I beg your pardon?
Breast pockets. Do listen. I was able to put two and two together.
I want a policeman.
No, you don't. I'll offer you a much better service. I do speak the language. A slight Cantonese accent, it's true, but good, basic Chinese. Interesting group of girls. European, of course, but obviously educated in China. On their first contact with London, and all it has to offer, you'll need someone like me to, well, shall we begin?
Begin what?
Just put yourself in my hands. I'll go in the first taxi with some of the girls, and then you...
Police!
Madam!
Police!
Madam, what on earth do you want
police
for? I don't understand.
What's the trouble, then?
I don't know, officer. I merely approached this lady, ready to pick up her girl.
Oh, you did you?
Yes, you see, I speak Chinese.
You speak what?
Chinese. Can't you understand English?
Arrest this man.
Oh, no, don't stay.
They speak English.
Well, what's so surprising about that?
They should speak Chinese. I mean, what the devil am I doing here if they can speak English as well as what you and me can? I mean, what you and me do.
Arrest this man.
You're all mad. I'm only doing my job. I'm a linguist.
That's the first time I've heard it called that.
How dare you? I protest.
Now, shut up.
They're handling a genius. Oh, this is all wrong. I protest.
The constable shoulder Francis away. Lily looks the exterior of a suburban house up and down, then rings the doorbell. The greying man in a silk dressing gown answers. She stares at him.
You're Martin Paul, the actor.
That's right.
I thought this wasn't a beauty salon.
Pardon? Won't you please come in?
But I don't understand. I'm supposed to be demonstrating a new beauty treatment.
A very pretty mistake, too.
Mr. Paul, please.
You're just what I need to help me dress and undress. What a wonderful organization you belong to.
Mr. Paul, really?
I like helping hands.
And I don't like helping yourself hands.
But, my dear, you don't understand.
Will you please try and control yourself?
My fifth marriage has just ended.
What's that got to do with it?
Oh, to the devil with my rehearsal. Console me. Have pity on me in my hour of need. Be kind to me. Who knows? You may well be number six.
Not on your lily, I'm off.
She pushes him off into a chair, then rushes out the door, stopping to mouth a few choice words at him through the window.
Pity.
Montgomery Infield Hopping looks slightly bewildered as he enters the beauty salon. A man comes from out back.
Morning, sir.
Morning. I say,
Is the rehearsal being held here?
It isn't a rehearsal, it's a demonstration.
Oh, call it what you like. Where's Mr. Paul?
Who's Mr. Paul?
Incredible though it may seem, there's been a mistake.
Through there, I've assembled the cream of the beauty trade to watch a lovely girl undergoing our latest beautification routine. And have I got a girl? No! I've got you!
Yeah, steady
and
on.
I don't want...
He pushes Hopping backwards. He falls into a sunken bath of mud surrounded by an audience. In a house, a young man's making a phone call.
Hello? Hello? Togetherness Marriage Agency? This is Leonard Beamish here. It's 3 minutes after the time she's supposed to have arrived. Where is she? Here I am on the verge of the most important meeting of my life, and you can't even get her here on time. Oh, it's no use your saying she'll be here in a minute. The fact is, she isn't here now. I may say I'm extremely dissatisfied. The next time I want a wife, I shall take my custom elsewhere. She's here.
Nervously, he straightens his jacket, then goes to answer the door and opens up. Delia enters with a bunch of flowers.
Hello. Mr. Beamish?
Oh, yes.
He stares at her.
Oh, how lovely. I know that everything's going to be all right.
I see no reason why it shouldn't be.
How exquisite. How fresh. How exciting.
May I come in?
Oh, please, please do come in.
Into the lounge, shutting the door behind them.
Thoughtful of you to have brought flowers for me.
Well, that's what you wanted, wasn't it? A woman's touch around your home.
Please, do sit down.
Well, I shan't be able to sit down, I'm afraid. There'll be so much to do.
Yes.
Now, where do you want me to start?
Well, I'll leave that to you.
She looks about.
That doesn't look very comfortable.
Plumping the sofa, she sits on it.
Comfortable enough for anybody now, eh?
Yes.
He sits beside her.
Isn't it wonderful? We're the same religion.
Eh?
I mean, isn't it a good thing that the agency takes care of things like this?
I didn't know they did.
Oh, but they do.
Do they?
Oh, definitely.
I can't think why. Your personal beliefs don't concern me. The important thing is to get on with the job and enjoy it.
But don't you want to talk? Even a little?
Talk? But we both know what I'm here to do. What's there to talk about?
You sound much more experienced than I'd imagined.
Oh, I've had plenty of variety since I joined the agency.
Variety?
That's why I joined.
Of course.
But I don't mind. You must take the rough with the smooth. That's what I always say.
What are you doing?
Stripping for action. I like to be comfy when I'm working. Now, you don't have to do anything. Just leave it all to me.
I think you ought to go.
Go? But I haven't done anything for you yet.
And I don't want you to. There's been a beastly mistake.
You specifically asked for flowers. I've got the instructions here.
And I've got the letter here.
Show me.
Show me.
They swap, read, look at each other aghast, then sink onto the sofa together. He looks up at her sheepishly.
Helping hands.
Marriage agency?
She looks about forlornly.
I thought you just wanted someone to tidy the place. A woman's touch. Ready for...
For a tea party I'm giving my aunt in... 2 weeks' time.
Mike.
Well, now, here we are. Aren't they lambs?
They look like birds to me.
Cages of them.
Right. Where's the show, then?
Olympia, next year.
Olympia. Mm-hmm. No, I mean your show. Oh, that must be a corker.
Must it?
Oh, you're crafty, you are. Dead crafty. From the outside, this looks just like an ordinary house. Where'd you keep them?
Keep what?
You know.
Oh, but I don't know.
Oh, now, look, lady, if there's one thing you can rely on with our agency, it's discretion. And if you want me to do the job, I must know where they are.
But they're here. Can you not see?
He looks about.
Where?
What do you mean?
Where do the girls undress?
But there are no girls here.
Who does undress here, then?
Only the old woman when she goes to bed.
Quiet, Captain Hook.
Put his head in a bucket.
You do, and I'll bite your thumb off.
Get out of it.
Look, you are from Helping Hands.
Of course. I'm your chucker out.
There's been a mistake.
A neon sign flashes non-stop all strip. Gabriel descends a staircase and does a double take at a wall photograph of a semi-naked woman posing with a parasol. He walks in.
Oh, hello.
The manager...
What do you want?
Your birds, and I can't wait. Tell me, what sort are they?
What sort you like?
Blue tits.
Eh?
Have you got any?
No. No, this place is centrally heated.
Oh, tropical birds.
We have got one from Ceylon, yes.
Ceylon? Oh, my goodness. How do I keep the poor things warm in a taxi?
Look, chum.
Yes.
You got us wrong. This is a respectable place. You could bring your aunt here.
Oh, can I? Thank you.
You're not by any chance from Helping Hands.
Yes, that's correct.
I'm afraid you made a mistake.
Oh, no, I can't. You see, we've got a system.
I asked for a chucker out. We've been having trouble with gate crashes, rowdy elements, forged membership cards. I wanted somebody tough to turf them out.
And you got me.
I got you.
Yes. Well, a job's a job. Orders are orders. When do I start?
You mean you'll take the job?
Yes, please.
Well, bully for you.
Thanks.
Gabriel peeps through some velvet curtains into the club.
Oh, I say. Well, you're quite wrong, you know. I couldn't bring my auntie here.
The lady loads Mike up with bird cages.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The parrot.
Gee up, gee up, gee up.
You need a good punch up the beak, you do.
Back at Helping Hands, Bert and the others have another visit from the incomprehensible man.
Oh, how do you do?
Right.
I've been thinking about this earlier, Busy, and I was wondering whether you'd gather together now all ready for the frail, if you were for that.
Sir, perhaps I'll be able to understand you if you talk slowly. Now, I'm sure it's my fault, but do me a favour, slowly.
I have for many crathers Olmstead and invest in Moe Craven for him, and with all this rail, so I can follow through him to Kate for you.
I give in. I just don't understand.
I do.
You do?
I understand. He gobbledygooks.
I don't care what he eats.
You don't understand.
Oh, no, I don't understand. Translate it.
How do you do?
How do you do? Mad to play interpret?
Well, how extraordinary is necessary for Doolittle and these. But you can strail through this message, tell these Peatlowers and Mr. Hayden, sir, there was Godin.
Mr. Handy, you'll have to prepare yourself for a shock. This gentleman is your landlord. And he's just given you notice to quit.
Quit? Just because I don't talk his language? Racial prejudice, that's what it is.
Really? No prejudice in Southern colour bargains. Well, oh no. Each man's investing mode, and that was in the future, is late for his own gale. And so that's what I've drove for it, and therefore, that's all I've asked.
He says not at all. He's just received a much better offer for these premises.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Oh, dear, just as we were settling in so comfily.
Well, I don't realise the problem's zone for this thing like this. How did I get the message home for weeks and on him the day and trying to concept these Peatlow?
He says he feels very cut up about it, and he's been trying to tell you personally about it for weeks to soften the blow.
Well, I'm sure he would all chip in towards the cost of the rent increase.
Oh, yes, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we're not having that. We'll have to find new premises.
Where? Took you 3 months to find this place, and it's no palace.
That's the end of Helping Hands.
Oh, back to the Labour Exchange. Oh, no. Surely there must be some way out.
Yeah, that door, we're sunk.
Well, you're a defeatist lot. Surely there's something we can do about it.
No, we'll just have to be sensible about it. It's a matter of business. In his shoes, I'd do exactly the same thing.
If I was in his shoes, I'd run for my life.
But it's not going to solve our problem, is it?
All conscious and deep and a sheddy tear for those problems, the human being, and a suffer under wet seal in the water dangling in the early morning. But I've got to suffer, sir, and I would say that you could all still remain if you couldn't suffer just a small gracious generups.
Our landlord says he has been very moved by our loyalty to this enterprise and by the nature of the enterprise itself. We can stay.
Oh, good.
Oh, well, that's nice. Thank you.
If we will do something for him.
What?
Oh, I'll do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, come on.
I have in this very environs and beautiful green lawns as England's never known, a great builders in Bunbaraki, and the very fine parapetters, high the side, gargoyle in the front entrance, a filigroom, windy staircase up to the ceiling, fine glinty scintillade, the dangly chandelier, this fine central grieve with Van Gogh cylinders on either side of the wall. And if anyone will come, gather together, working in the hell bone, and work himself to a stick of the shadow of the former soul, so this 99 which here's Lisey was handy home, free garber.
His main business is property development. You know, the buying and the refurbishing of old houses. He's just bought the oldest and dirtiest house he's ever had, and the cleaning bill for it is prohibitive. If we will all clean it for him, he's willing to give us a 99 years lease.
Why not make it the round 100?
You'm shuppy cakey.
You shuppy cake hole.
The landlord's house is in rack and ruin. Thick cobwebs cling to broken furniture strewn about the dust-caked floor. Rubble collects in piles as plaster crumbles from the walls. Bert comes down the staircase blowing dust off the banister. He approaches the team, who are in Helping Hands overalls.
You know, it'll take 99 years to clear up this dump.
Yeah, well, step by step, that's the method, little by little.
OK, then, boss, where do we start?
Well, I reckon to make it easy for us to walk about, we ought to sweep the floor first.
I don't wish to interfere, but I'd have thought it better to start cleaning at the top of the house. Yes, quite right. I mean, disturbed dust will only fall down and muck up what we've already cleaned up.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I submit, with the greatest respect, and for the sake of efficient team working, that we all belt up.
Here, here.
Always the gent.
Oh, any common.
Let us put ourselves in the hands of Mr. Handy and listen to what he says.
Well, I bow to the majority, of course. But I'd like it noted that I did suggest the suggestion I suggested.
And very suggestive it was, too.
Yes, all right, come on, that's enough. Here, over here, please.
Who's the scrubber?
Come on, I've done it.
The motley crew march to one end of the room, each armed with a broom.
Now, get in a straight line, sir. Come on.
Oh, sorry.
All right, now. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Quick. Quick.
They sweep in unison, sending up a thick, choking cloud of dust.
I'll get some water.
Mike enters the kitchen, pulls cobwebs from the tap, and turns it on. Nothing comes out. He goes back to the others.
There's no water. We'll have to turn on the main. The water main. I wonder where they are.
Bert goes to the cellar door.
Can you go to it? Excuse me, the cellar.
He opens the door and looks in.
Run it down and have a look. If I find it, I'll shout up. You turn the tap on.
Stepping in, he falls into the gloom.
Mr. Handy!
Turn the flaming light on!
The flaming... Yeah, oh, yes. I'm not at all sure, though, where they put...
Gabriel, reaching in, falls too.
Oh, don't go. There's so few of us left.
Well, what about the flaming light?
The electricity supply doesn't appear to be connected, and someone might have told you the stairs begin immediately.
Well, they didn't, did they?
No, they didn't.
Oh!
Can you find the water main in the dark?
I'll try. Oh, blimey! I found it with my blasted shin. Well, Gabriel, give me a hand. Don't you stand there.
I say, how on earth did you know where I was standing? Oh, oh!
Oh, I've just remembered. I left the tap turned on.
We got it!
From the tap, jettisoning Mike into the others. Mike fights against the gushing cannon of water, trying to reach the tap.
Oh. Women and children first! Thank you, Mother! Come on!
Sam and Francis wade forward against the geyser, pushing at it with their brooms, but the torrent is too strong, and it catapults them back into the wall, which they crash through, leaving a hole. Sam gets up and staggers back into the kitchen.
Francis, where are you? Francis, where you gone?
Francis is right behind. Sam goes back through the hole, sprawling over the rubble. Francis too. The others rush to help them up, but get blasted away by the watery crossfire. They all slip and slide helplessly. They retreat to a safe distance as Bert clambers up from the cellar.
That's unlikely. They would just turn it on.
Bert's knocked back by the spray. Gabriel climbs up from the cellar, shutting the door behind him.
Turn it off! Turn it off! Shut off the main! Get down and turn off the main!
Gabriel tries the door, but it's stuck. He gestures.
We'll break it down!
Gabriel gulps, then steps back, preparing to charge it. His lunge breaks the door, and he falls back down.
Before,
at least.
The clutch! Fancy charging a rotten old door like that! Cool!
Hey!
Gabriel! I mean, any idiot can tell whether a door's solid or not. Look, all you gotta do is test it! Simple!
He leans against it. It topples backwards. Bert shouts into the cellar. At the front door.
Hello. I'm all right. And I've turned off the main. You'll see. The water'll die down in a moment.
He slams the front door. A sash window falls in. The door then falls on the porch floor, which collapses.
Oh, there's a big hole.
Don't want to say I told you so, but I did suggest we started upstairs.
Look at all the mess.
I'm looking.
Let's face it, chums, we're done for. This is the end of Helping Hands.
Oh, come on, well, let's do it.
The landlord appears at the doorway. He gapes at the huge hole and steps around it. Inside, he leans on the banister. It collapses. They all look up.
What a remarkable organisation setting up, to be sure. How on earth you would know that I was changing my mind in the midstream? Decide to follow up and demolish all this property and to build a very fine, luxury, modern flabber block.
You can say that again.
Flabber block. Remarkable. Truly remarkable. The extraordinary thing is the pace of progress in the works are done in a short space of tire load. Oh, folly, folly. Well, it only leaves one thing to sum it up on this.
What's that?
Karaoke.
He waves them goodbye.
Goodly bye, load. What a remarkable organisation you all are. How could you possibly have known I'd changed my mind and decided to pull this house down? He said you can pull down the greenhouse, the outhouse and the washhouse and the...
That fell down of its own accord.
Yes, and he's going to build instead a modern luxury block of flats. And he said only one thing remains to be said. Carry on.
The carry-on team set about the house with their brooms, using them as mallets, clobbering everything in sight, whipping up cloudfuls of dust. The end. ITFC audio description, Jim Apted.